Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be with you. Have you ever had the feeling or thought to yourself, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? Have you ever had that feeling? Ever had that thought? Now, normally it happens after maybe you've been super excited about something, right? You've looked forward to something, and when it finally happens, something happens that makes you realize maybe this isn't going to be as fun as I thought it would be, or maybe it's not going to be quite as easy as I thought it was going to be. You might even think for a minute, well, maybe did I make a mistake? Maybe I should just stop what I'm doing. Maybe I should just go home. I know I've had several of those moments over the years. One happened just after I started a new job. I was super excited to be starting this job. The salary was more. The hours were going to be better because there were better staff, so there were more people to take on the work of the assigned tasks. I enjoyed everyone that I met during the interview process, and I was so looking forward to starting this job. I started the job, and everything was going great. And I get invited to a team meeting the very first week that I'm there, and I was excited to be a part of that team and to find out what's going on. And I don't remember the details of the meeting now, but this is what I do remember from that meeting. I remember that the production manager and the maintenance manager got in a shouting match with the safety manager. And the operations manager, who was there, seemed to almost be encouraging it and egging it on. And I had never seen that in a professional setting before. That was very new to me. And I also remember thinking, well, the safety manager, she's just trying to do her job. That's her job. She's supposed to be thinking about safety. She's just trying to do her job. And it was at that moment I remember feeling, oh no, what did I get myself into? Did I jump from the frying pan into the fire? Kind of thing. And the kids, they're playing soccer this year. So the boys asked me if I would be the coach for their team. So I agreed, and I volunteered to coach their team. And I guess on Gracie's registration form, I also checked a little box that said I'd be willing to coach. And when the roster started to come out, lo and behold, I was chosen to coach both teams. Well, I contacted the organizer, and I said, look, I don't think I can coach two teams. Can you do something about this? And he said, yeah, it'll be okay. I think there's somebody else that'll coach. Except the reason that they chose me for both teams is because they really can't find any other parents to volunteer to coach. So by the end of the week, I was coaching two teams again. But it was going to be okay. You know, they were going to work with me on the schedule. They're going to make sure that the schedules were such that I could coach both teams without having to choose. And then the schedule came out. The boys' team has 8 games, and 7 of the games had conflicts to where I would have had to choose one or the other to coach. But they got that fixed. But my immediate feeling was, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? Unless you think that I'm the only sarcastic one in my family, I have to share a story with you from last night. Because I have to share something with you that my loving and very supportive wife told me or asked me. Last night as I was working on this message, I was coming through the kitchen heading to the bedroom to work on this message while she was washing some dishes at the sink. And my very loving and supportive wife, she asked me what I would be speaking about today. And I told her that my title was, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? And she smiled, and I continued down into the bedroom. And I heard her call after me, so it's a message about being married to me? Which, of course, it is not. But then I remembered that verse that says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And I realized, that's how she feels being married to me. And you know, some days I probably deserve that, you know? Some days I probably do, but anyway, it's a familiar feeling to everybody here, right? We've all been there. I dare say most everyone could tell their own stories because human nature hasn't changed since creation, right? We all go through things from time to time that make us wonder, Oh no, what have I gotten myself into? In fact, because human nature hasn't changed since creation, the Bible actually recounts stories with that same kind of theme that we can still learn from today. And the Bible records that this very feeling happened with a whole nation. But it all starts with one shepherd who is out in the desert and the mountains. So if you will, turn with me over to Exodus chapter 3, because that's where our story begins. Exodus chapter 3, and we'll begin in verse 1. We'll read verses 1 through 3. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 1 says, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the back of the desert, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him as a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, 'I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn.'" So Moses, he's out there, he's shepherding his father-in-law's flock. He sees this amazing sight. There's a bush that looks like it's on fire, but it's not burning. Right? It's not changing color. The bush isn't being consumed. The leaves aren't even wilting. And Moses thinks, you know, wow, I need to go over there. I need to check this out, take a closer look. I need to see this. Now Moses is writing this down after it's happened, right? So as he writes it, now he knows that it was God in the bush. But when it first caught his attention, he was just going to look at this bush. We know what happens next, right? When God sees that he's got Moses' attention, he begins to talk to Moses. He tells him, "Take off his sandals. Where you're standing is holy ground." And then God begins to tell Moses that God has a mission for Moses. See, God has heard the cry of the Israelites in Egypt, and the time is right for God to fulfill the promise that he made to Abraham. Mr. Taylor was talking a little bit about that earlier. And God tells Moses that it's his job to go tell Pharaoh to let the Israelites go. And God also tells Moses, by the way, Pharaoh is not going to listen to you. But don't worry about that, Moses. Because I'm going to do great signs and wonders and bring them out anyway. And I'm not just going to bring them out as a free people, but the Israelites, they're going to go in there and they're going to plunder the Egyptians. And on their way out, they're going to come out with gold and silver and clothes, and they're going to be rich as they come out. But as we pick up the story in Exodus chapter 4 and verse 1, we start to see Moses' reaction to this. Exodus chapter 4 and verse 1. "Then Moses answered and said, 'But suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, the Lord has not appeared to you.'" In your mind, can't you imagine the expression that Moses was making as he thought to himself, "Oh no, what did I get myself into? I was just going over here to look at this cool bush that was on fire, and all of a sudden I'm getting sent to Egypt." He didn't want any part of this assignment to free the Israelites. See, Moses was just out minding his own business. This bush caught his eye. He thought he'd get a closer look. He didn't know he'd be talking to God. And now God wants him to go back to Egypt? It's been 40 years since he's been there. And not only that, but he left Egypt because he killed a man. And Moses tells God, "Besides, the Israelites aren't going to believe me anyway after I tell them I've been talking to you." He immediately tries to get out of this assignment. And Moses gives so many excuses that God becomes angry with Moses, but he allows his brother Aaron to be his helper. So Moses meets Aaron, and they go to the elders of Israel as God commanded them. And as we pick up the story in Exodus chapter 4 and verse 30, we can see how the Israelites react. Exodus chapter 4. In verse 30, it says, "And Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses. Then he did the signs in the sight of the people. So the people believed. And when they heard the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked on their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshiped. So Aaron tells the people the message God gave Moses. He performed the signs which God told Moses to perform, and the people believe what they're told. This is what they had been looking forward to. This is what they wanted. They had been crying out day and night for deliverance. And now that the deliverance was here, and they were eager for it to happen, and they bowed and they worshiped the God who just told them that it was coming. They were excited, and they were looking forward to this deliverance. You know, it couldn't come fast enough, right? But then something happened that changed their whole attitude about the situation. As so often happens, something happened that changed the way they saw things. It didn't happen exactly how they thought it was going to happen. And what they thought was going to be a great thing, they started to look at as a bad thing. You see, after Moses went to the Israelites, he went to Pharaoh, just like God told him to do. And Pharaoh decided that the people only wanted to go worship God because they weren't busy enough. They must not be working hard enough. They've got too much free time. So to remedy that, you can go gather your own straw, but you still got to make all the same number of bricks. And in Exodus chapter 5 and verse 21, we see how Israel responded to that. Exodus chapter 5 and verse 21 says, "And they said to them, let the Lord," the Israelites said to Moses and Aaron, that is, "let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hands to kill us." So Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it that you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all." So Israel blamed Moses, the one who had just told them that God was coming to save them. They blamed him. Kill the messenger. And the one that told them that God was going to lead them out of Egypt had now become their enemy. They even asked God to judge Moses because of the worsening of their treatment. And even Moses doesn't understand what's going on. He prays and he asks God, "Why am I here again? I thought you sent me to free these people. You haven't delivered them yet." You know, right now the Israelites and Moses, they're both thinking, "Oh no, what have we gotten ourselves into?" The God that they had just worshipped earlier when he sent Moses to them, now they're asking that same God to judge Moses. And as for Moses, he's frustrated also. That first bump in the road completely changes the outlook on their situation, doesn't it? And they went from praise to panic. And they went from faith to doubt at the very first sign of resistance. And Moses should have known better, right? God told him that Pharaoh wasn't going to listen. God told Moses in chapter 4, "Be sure you do the miracles that I tell you before Pharaoh." And be sure, he tells him in chapter 4, verse 23, "Be sure that you tell Pharaoh that if he doesn't let the Israelites go, I'm going to kill his son." God told Moses that this was coming. But you know, human nature hasn't changed since creation, has it? We've got a tendency to do this too. That thing that we were so excited about, when that first bump in the road comes, maybe it ruins our day or it ruins our outlook. But you know what? God is merciful. And he reassures Moses that he is going to deliver Israel. And he tells Moses that he's going to see the power of God like he's never seen it before. And that when God is done with Egypt, they're going to throw Israel out. And this is also where he introduces Israel to his name, the Eternal, or the Self-Existent One. See, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they knew him as El Shaddai, or the Almighty. They had heard about God's power, and now he was trying to tell them that he would keep his promise that he made hundreds of years ago to Abraham because he was eternal. So Moses goes to the Israelites, and he delivers this message from God. And in Exodus chapter 6 and verse 9, we see their response to that. Exodus chapter 6 and verse 9 says, "So Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moses because of the anguish of spirit and cruel bondage." They were so despondent that they couldn't see what God was doing, and they wouldn't listen to what he was trying to tell them. They let that feeling of, oh no, what have I gotten myself into, overwhelm them. And suddenly everything was Moses' fault. Everything was great until this guy Moses showed up, right? No, it wasn't. You'd been crying out day and night to God to be delivered from slavery. And God sent Moses to deliver you. Oh yeah, well, I forgot about that. Well, but at least they gave us straw before Moses showed up. See, at that first sign of resistance, they lost the hope that they would be delivered. But God is again merciful, and he does exactly what he said he was going to do. He used plague after plague to completely destroy the land of Egypt. After 9 plagues, Pharaoh still would not let the Israelites go, so God fulfilled his word from Exodus chapter 4 and verse 23. The 10th plague killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, even Pharaoh's firstborn. After that, the Egyptians sent the Israelites away, and they gave them gold and silver and clothing to take with them. This would have been an incredibly exciting time. I can't imagine what it would have been like. God showed his power over Egypt and all the false gods, and he brought out the Israelites exactly how he said he would. And now something else supernatural starts to happen. They start to follow a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And wherever the cloud goes during the day and wherever the fire goes at night, that's where the Israelites go. Now this whole thing got started because Moses went to see a bush on fire that wasn't being consumed. And now the whole nation of Israel is following a pillar of fire that's just out there burning nothing. It's just self-existent fire in a big enough column that the whole nation can see it. And during the day, they followed a huge pillar of cloud. And God tells Moses to tell the children of Israel to go and camp by the Red Sea, because God is not done punishing Egypt. You see, the Egyptians, they had a change of heart after they let the Israelites go. It was the Egyptians' turn to have an, oh no, what have I gotten myself into moment. Sure, Egypt was destroyed, but who was going to rebuild it? They just let all the slaves go. Their whole workforce was gone. So they decided that the thing to do was to go after the Israelites and to try to bring them back. So God tells Moses, go camp over here by the Red Sea. Pharaoh will think that he's got you trapped. And then I will make sure that Pharaoh knows for certain that I am the Lord. So that's what the Israelites do. They go and they camp exactly where God tells them to camp. And just like God said he would, Pharaoh follows them in there. And this is great. Everything's going to plan, right? Except that's not how the Israelites look at it. Turn over to Exodus chapter 14 and verse 10. And we'll see how the Israelites respond. Exodus chapter 14. We'll read verses 10 through 12. It says, "And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, "Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness."' God had told the Israelites that this was going to happen. He told them that Pharaoh would follow them in. He told them that he would show Pharaoh that he was truly the Lord. They had just seen the power of God in Egypt through all the plagues. And they were following a column of fire through the desert that wasn't burning anything. Yet when Pharaoh got close, when it started to happen exactly as God said it would, they let their fear take over. And the thought of, oh no, what have I gotten myself into, overtook them again. They went from believing God to panicking because they saw the Egyptian army approaching. And they panicked even though God told them this was what was going to happen. They even wanted to go back to Egypt. They tell Moses it would have been better for them to have been slaves in Egypt than to die in the wilderness. And they let themselves become completely overwhelmed by what they could see with their eyes. And they completely forgot about why and how they were out there in the first place. God had brought them there. This was part of God's plan. He told them this was going to happen. Well, you know what happens next, right? God opens up the Red Sea. The pillar of fire goes to the back of the Israelites, separates them from the Egyptians. The Israelites pass through on the dry land, and the Egyptians follow the Israelites into the Red Sea, and God knocks the wheels off their chariots. You know that phrase, the wheels came off? Well, that literally happened here. The wheels literally came off the chariots, and it says that the chariots became difficult to drive, which I think is probably an understatement. And once the Israelites were all the way through, then the Red Sea crashes down and drowns out the army of the Egyptians. And the Israelites rejoice again. We're told that they believed the Lord and they believed Moses. They even wrote and sang a new song, worshiping God for the great victory and deliverance that he had just given them. So they continue on their journey, and after 3 days, they find themselves in the wilderness of Shur, but they can't find any water. They go on to Marah, and they find bitter water. And once again, that human nature kicks in, and they find themselves with that same sense of, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? We can read about it in Exodus chapter 15 and verse 23. Exodus chapter 15 and verse 23, we'll read verses 23 through 27. It says, now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters were made sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them, and said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. So they camped there by the waters. So the people started complaining to Moses that they can't drink this bitter water. And at this point, Moses has got to be thinking, hey, I'm following the same pillar of cloud and fire that you guys are. Right? We only go where the cloud and the fire takes us. But the people complained to Moses about the water, so Moses cries to God, and he heals the water. He makes it so they can drink it. And he tells them here something that might at first glance seem out of place, but God tells them that if they obey him, that he will heal them and protect them from the diseases which he had put on the Egyptians. But this verse isn't out of place, because God was trying to teach them something. Just as God could heal those waters and make them drinkable, God could heal the Israelites. And if they would diligently obey, then God promised to heal them and to protect them. And then he shows his strength and his power again by bringing them to an even better place. He blesses them by bringing them to a place that's got 12 wells of water and palm trees all around. He brings them to a literal oasis in the desert. And things are great. The Israelites have water. Everyone's happy. But then it's time to leave this oasis. They have to continue on their journey. And as soon as they leave that oasis, they find another difficulty. They find another uncomfortable circumstance. And they let their mind run wild once again with that thought and that feeling of, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? Let's pick up the story in Exodus chapter 16 and verse 3. We'll read verses 3 and 4. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. So they had thirsted, and God gave them drink. But now as soon as the Israelites get a little bit hungry, they find themselves falling right back into that old way of thinking. Instead of remembering how awful it was in Egypt, the Israelites start romanticizing their time there. They start talking about all the wonderful food that they had. And once again, they start blaming Moses and accusing him of bringing them out in the wilderness to die. But God is infinitely merciful, and he takes care of this problem as well. He starts to give them bread from heaven. This is where the manna starts. Just a few verses earlier, God had told them that if they would obey, that he would heal them. Now he tells them that if they obey, that he will provide all the food that they need. Great, right? Problem solved. Now they've got food. Everything's going to be wonderful from here on out, right? Well, actually, as the Israelites moved to the next camping spot, they got thirsty again. And you know what's coming next, don't you? So Exodus chapter 17 in verse 3. Exodus chapter 17 and verse 3. It says, and the people thirsted for water, and the people complained against Moses. And they said, why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with this people? They are all almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Oh no, what have I gotten myself into? Why did I ever leave Egypt? Being a slave wasn't so bad. At least I had water to drink there. Moses, did you really have to bring us this far into the desert to kill us with thirst? And I mean, think of the children. They've got nothing to drink, and even our animals are thirsty. What kind of a monster are you, Moses? But God shows his mercy once again, and he gives the Israelites water out of the rock. Not only his mercy, but also his power. And he pointed forward to water coming from the rock, Jesus Christ. And they continue the journey. They defeat Amalek in battle, and God finally brings them to Mount Sinai. And when they get there, God begins to reveal to them why he brought them out in the first place. Let's go to Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19, and we'll read verses 5 through 8. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people, and he laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. Then all the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. See, God brought them out of Egypt to be a special people if they would obey him. And they come to the point here where they finally say, whatever the Lord says, that's what we're going to do. So what can we learn from this? Well, everything that happened to them along the way, God used to teach them a lesson. Every time they started to think, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? God used that for a teaching experience. First, God taught the Israelites that he was a God of power. When they thought that the Egyptians taking the straw away meant that things were going awry, God taught them to trust in his power and to have patience. Second, when they found the water was too bitter to drink, God taught them that he was their healer. God had the power to heal and even protect from disease. Third, when the Israelites became hungry, God taught them that he is the one that provides food. And fourth, when they became thirsty, he taught them that he is the one that provides water. God is the one who satisfies our hunger and our thirst. And God did all of that to finally bring the Israelites to a point where they understood what they got themselves into. All that the Lord has spoken, we will do. And they weren't perfect from here on out. Mr. Taylor was talking about some of that. And as we go through life, trials and tribulations, they'll come our way. And they're not pleasant while we're going through them, but let's not forget that they're part of the plan. God is working out a great plan in your life and in the lives of everyone who has ever lived. And when we're going through the trials, let's remember the example of the Israelites and remember that God let them experience those things for a purpose. God is trying to bring you to the same place. He wants you to know what you have gotten yourself into. He wants you to come to the place where you're ready to say, but more importantly, to live the words, all the Lord has spoken, I will do.